Hello, everyone. I'm going to call to order this February 23rd, 2015 meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. I'd like to welcome all of the members of the audience who are here, whose average age seems to be less than 30 years old. Is that correct? Yes. And it's great to see you all. Today, the focus of our committee in its entirety is going to be youth workforce development. And colleagues, you'll remember when we got the report a couple of weeks ago from Graham Slater talking about the state of our workforce, you know, he did point out to us one of the challenges that we're facing is with youth employment, kids getting that first job that lines them up for productive years in the workforce. And he suggested to us that that should be an area that we ought to work on, and we're going to start today. Okay. So what we're going to do is we'll just move right into our informational hearing on youth workforce. We have we'll eventually open a work session because we have a few committee bills to be introduced. And we do have a public hearing on a related issue, an issue that's related to youth employment, and we'll open that hearing at some point. But for now, I want to open this informational meeting on youth workforce. We have several panels of invited testimony for this from people who are going to give us a sense of what the state is doing around youth workforce and then also what some of the challenges that we continue to face are. And we'll be hearing from a number of youth who are involved in youth workforce programs as well. So I want to call up the first panel, and we have Karen Hummelbaugh from CCWD, Tim Sinatra from Marion and Polk County Boys and Girls Club, and then Vanessa Barajas from Salem.
Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Karen Hummelbaugh. I am the Workforce Division Director for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Many of the youth programs that we are talking about today run through our agency. I think this is just an exciting day, thanks to those of you who came down and met with the youth earlier, but we have 100 youth here today that just represent a tiny slice of the folks who have successes in our programs throughout the state. And we have both federal and state funding that funds these programs, and I wish we could bring each and every one of them forward to tell you a story, but we're hopefully going to give you a good representation of the youth that are here today. I'm going to just talk through a couple of slides and then go ahead and let the folks talk that really have some stories to share with you. Chair Dimbrough just spoke to this. This is actually a slide from Graham's report that you all have that is the endangered youth in the labor force. And just as a reminder, one of every seven youth is what we would call an opportunity youth. They're disconnected from our education system and the labor market. Of the estimated 465,000 youth that are aged 16 to 24 in our state, nearly 67,000 are not in school or working. And as you all know, kind of one of our sad statistics at this point is that Oregon's high school graduation rate is now the lowest in the country. Using the national estimates, we could say that in a single year, Oregon experiences over $924 million of direct fiscal burden as a result of those disconnected youth that we talked about in terms of them being disconnected from school and work. The recent job growth that we've had has really overlooked our younger workers, and younger workers account for 29% of Oregon's unemployed. So this is a huge missed opportunity for experience for these individuals. The youth who aren't working are missing out on that first job. When we talk in a room of folks who are 25 or older, a lot of people were started working when they were 13 or 14, maybe in a family business or in the fields or whatever that may be. And it's sort of how you get that preparation for your work ethics and your self-sufficiency, that first opportunity. So the youth who are not getting that opportunity at this point really are having a gap in terms of their opportunity to explore careers, see what they are interested in or not, and ability to gain income that might be able to be used for future needs, such as going on to college or a certification program. So aside from the immediate outcomes, it could be potentially affecting generational poverty and generational outcomes that we're talking about, and definitely their lifelong earnings. And I put the hyperlink in there to Graham's report just in case you all didn't have it or needed it quickly. So we do have, and we talked about this previously when I was here, there are federal dollars that come to this state through the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, and those fund youth programs through our local workforce investment boards. And then we also have state funds that are funding the three programs that you see now, the Oregon Youth Development Council, Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and the National Career Readiness Certification Program. And I want to briefly just talk about the three of those, and then I'm going to share a short video with you. The Youth Development Council receives funding and provides grants to youth and innovation programs, and you'll hear from some folks who've benefited from those. These are community-based grants that are designed to assist existing efforts in education and workforce and help youth who are disconnected or are at risk of disconnecting from education or the labor market. The Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and you each should have received an annual report that hopefully is in front of you from this program. The Youth Conservation Corps has both a summer and school year program. The school year program is called the Stewardship Program. The summer program is where youth gain paid summer employment opportunities. They get education combined with their on-the-job training as they are getting leadership skills, work ethic, all of those things that we need for our future employees. And they also are gaining some environmental knowledge as they are out there through integrated classroom and field-based training. The National Career Readiness Certificate is something that I know Chair Dimbrough had worked hard to get some funding for in the last couple of biennia, and it's really making an impact statewide. But a place where we found that it's making the most substantial impact is really with our youth. The Department of Education allows the National Career Readiness Certificate to be used as an alternative assessment to meet the essential skills graduation requirement. And so the NCRC is, we just recently, in a sort of a push we did over the last 3 months, we have 3,500 youth in this state that have tested and received their NCRC. There are a few that will be speaking to you today. Many of them are using that as their graduation criteria so that they're able to graduate. In particular, the percentage of graduates, we had one high school, Echo High School in Lane County. They had an increase of 35% in the number of youth that were able to graduate because they received this certification. And it's a certification that really tests you on reading, writing, and locating information that is applicable to the workplace. And so it's something different than your kind of usual standardized tests. Please note, too, while we're listening to folks speak today, that many of them are going to identify themselves as from a program name, but they are coming from one of these programs, and they may be getting funding from multiple programs and multiple federal programs, because we really do try and weave the experience based on the youth and make sure that they're getting everything they need. I'm going to share this video with you, and just as by way of a setup, this is an Oregon Youth Conservation Corps video. It will talk a little bit about the nature of the experiential learning that folks are getting and the on-the-job training, as well as what this means for them in terms of their future.
The Oregon Youth Conservation Corps is a program that develops and builds youth through education and workforce development.
They said I would be working with at-risk kids, and I said, what does that mean, at risk of what? They said they're at risk of not graduating, at risk of not getting employed. And so most of the youth, they're intelligent, they're bright. They just need a little more support and a little more stability in their life to get some traction.
One of the main pieces of an OICC program is experiential learning and hands-on education.
The work is just work like any other work. You know, you're digging trench, you're moving dirt, but the learning from it is really valuable.
Most of these kids, this is their first work experience. So it's a great opportunity for us to teach them about what the workplace is like and set up those expectations.
They earn money, but they also, they are gaining a valuable skills in how to show up to work on time, how to come prepared, how to be a team player.
They can write a resume. They can interview. They know how to talk.
They are getting an incredible amount of work done. What's really wonderful to see is it's all kinds of work. It's not just in one area.
It's a hard labor in a way. It's fun. You get to learn new things.
It's a pain in the butt, but at the end of the day, you're so proud of yourself.
We also have the Community Stewardship Corps, which is a school-based program where we work with 25 to 30 alternative high schools and middle schools, where part of their education takes place in the classroom and part of it takes place out in the field.
I think it's an incredible organization that gives students opportunities through the year and through the summer to do meaningful work for their community and for the environment. We help them develop the skills and tools necessary to be successful, and we expose them to a wide variety of career paths.
They're earning credits right now. Oregon has a service learning graduation requirement, as well as a career tech graduation requirement, and these kids are meeting those. They also can fulfill their elective credits through the OICC program.
Ever since I've been in OICC, it's kind of brought my mindset to actually wanting to graduate high school now.
What's an estuary?
What I try to do is create the culture where kids understand that high school is not the end. I'm trying to make you into a lifelong learner, because what you might want 20 years from now is not what you want today, and you want to be able to have the skill set to do what you want to do then.
I think it's really going to get me ready for like the type of work that I want to do.
They can give back to the community by building a greenhouse, or by teaching younger students, or by restoring a native stream bank. And those kinds of things, I think, have powerful and indelible impacts that stay with them for their entire life.
The combination of working out in the natural world, of working as a team and connecting to each other, and that confidence that arises in oneself is pretty profound transformation to see.
On paper, it says that I'm not very adept for the learning world. But out here, it's totally different.
If we had time, Chair Dimbrough and members of the committee, we'd have 100 more minutes or, you know, of great success stories. But that just gives you a flavor of what these programs are doing and how impactful they are in not just moving forward these youth lives, but really the future we have in this state and making sure that we have the economic base and the participation of our citizens moving forward. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Tim.
Okay, if there are any questions.
Well, let me just say, I think there are a few students in the room who are part of OICC. Is that right? Or any of you here?
Am I in the overflow?
Yeah.
Oh, and if we have time, I think it would be great if a couple of them could come and just say some words to us. Great. Okay, Tim, thank you.
Chair Dimbrough, Vice Chair Thatcher, committee members. For the record, my name's Tim Sinatra, Executive Director for the Boys and Girls Club of Salem, Marin, Polk Counties. I also wear two other hats. I'm a Youth Development Council member. I'm also the immediate past president for the Boys and Girls Club Alliance, which serves over 77,000 youth across the state. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to share one of the signature programs that we have launched here locally but is scaling across the state, called Training Teens for Tomorrow, which is supported by key funding sources, as she suggested earlier. I wanted to share with you that 4 years ago, we looked at our youth as the most important asset when it came to really preparing them for the future of careers. And we started to think, what do we need to do for these kids to be go-ready? And with an intentional response to Oregon's youth academic and career-related gaps, we launched Training Teens for Tomorrow. This program is directly supported by local Workforce Investment Board funding. T3 focuses on teen education, prevention, and employment opportunities that prepares youth with a 21st century skill set. T3 focuses on youth with significant barriers: foster care and homelessness, the economically disadvantaged, youth from single parents, and youth who have juvenile crime backgrounds. This program is a 24-month program. It has six phases. There's an intensity of the first four phases for the first year, and then a follow-up phase for the next year. The program basically helps youth what I call the three most important imperatives, helping youth navigate life, mainly poverty. Providing support to be academically successful despite their circumstances, and giving them real-time career-related experiences which build 21st century skill sets, which we call getting them go ready. This program is a very intense program. It starts with a 12-week program based on job skills and career development training, exploring opportunities. It has multiple community service projects embedded in it. There is consistent college and business exposure, a multi-week internship, and a 10-week paid apprenticeship, and a financial literacy education program. On top of that is developed, every youth walks away with a personal plan that helps them look at their personal and professional goals and how to achieve that. T3 is on its fifth year, and we're seeing amazing results. It's currently being scaled into three other cities, Grants Pass, Corvallis, and Lebanon. And we're seeing amazing results in those. From a four-year follow-up interview, internal survey, we went back and looked at the first two cohorts, and I'll introduce Vanessa being from one of them. 91% of the youth in these two cohorts were on track or have completed post-secondary education, and or are still employed, which were two of the main goals. The future sustainability of this program just here in Salem has a solid runway. We have seen local businesses get excited due to the seed money from the Workforce Investment Board and even the Youth Development Council, where people are getting involved. We actually have 50% of the program now funded for the next 5 years from one donor alone, because we had the opportunity to create the results and the success. So the investment is very strategic in creating great results. What I know is that in the end, and I want to introduce to you really, because Vanessa needs the time, because she'll share with you the results just from her own story. In the end, in my own opinion, all the programs and the funding sources pretty much have the same thing in common. They believe that every child, despite their circumstances, deserves the opportunity to discover their purpose in life and have a platform to pursue it. I'd like to introduce to you Vanessa Barajas, who is our training team for tomorrow. A graduate still involved in the program in the support phase as she's continuing her path. And Vanessa is a great representative to show you how a modest strategic investment and inexpensive interventions can have lasting effects. Vanessa.
Chair Dumbrow and committee members, thank you for allowing me to share my story with you. My name is Vanessa Barajas, and I come from a single parent. My mother was involved in a gang, and later on, I joined a gang, too. And from there on, it became, it got worse. I started doing drugs, and I was arrested, and I was in juvie for 3 months. And after I got out, one of my boyfriend at the time was arrested for murder. And just right there and then, I was just like, what am I doing with my life? And, you know, one day when I think about when I was sitting in my cell in juvie, and I received, they told me that I had a visit from my mom and my little brother. And they came to visit me, and I told them, and, you know, they came to visit me, talking to me. And I remember when the visit was over, my little brother, I think, was like 5 at the time, and he told my mother why I couldn't go home with them. He asked her, and when they were leaving, and I told him, you know, just right there and then it hit me. I'm like, well, you know, what am I doing? And you know, and I could hear my mom when she was walking away. She told my brother, you know, she has to stay here. She'll come back home soon. And I felt really bad, you know, because my little brothers, they look up to me. You know, I'm the oldest. I'm their role model. You know, whatever I do, they're going to want to do. And so that really hit me. And I decided, you know, that was kind of my transition there. And since, you know, I was involved with, you know, I got in trouble with the juvenile detention, they assigned me a probation officer. And she told me if I continued doing good, then she would I would be let off probation early. And so she referred me to this program, the T3 Training Teams for Tomorrow program at the Boys and Girls Club. And when I got there, I thought it was kind of ridiculous, all the stuff that they made us do. Like, when I got there, they told me that I had to do several steps to actually get the job because I needed a job then. And my probation officer referred me, and she's like, well, you could get this job and pay all your fines that you have with the court. And I said, okay, then that's what I'm going to do. And I got the job, and I got there. I'm like, okay, I got to do a lot of things to finally get the job. And they said, all right, I'm going to do it. But I'm only going to do it because I want to pay my fines. I'm not going to do it because I want anything to do with this program. When I did it, you know, I did everything I had to do, and I had, you know, juggled school and then full-time, and I worked for them. And, you know, on the side of that, I did volunteering, and it really changed me. And I was the first person in my family to graduate from high school and head to college. And I was surprised because I started off in high school my freshman year, ending my first year with straight Fs. And I ended my last year of high school with straight As. So I was really surprised at what I could do. And today I am a sophomore at Western Oregon University. And I plan to study criminal justice and become a lawyer. And I also have an 11-month-old baby. He's a boy. And most people, like my teachers, when they found out that I was expecting, they were kind of disappointed, which, you know, I expected them to be disappointed. But they kind of looked at me like saying, like they felt bad for me. And that's what people assume when a teenager or someone who is young gets pregnant. They assume that they're not going to end up nowhere in life because their life is over because there's a baby on the way. But that's not true. Why? Because I'm sitting here in front of you living proof of that, because I have an 11-month-old baby and I'm a sophomore and I'm continuing going to school because that's my way out. And that is going to be my key, you know, education is going to be my key to success. And that's the way I see it. And just don't believe everything you hear because, you know, there's at least, there's at least one person that's really trying. And it's hard. It's really hard. I'm not going to lie. It's really hard to have a kid and go to school full time. But it's not impossible. And that's what I'm doing. And I know for a fact that if I didn't join this program, the Training Teams for Tomorrow program with the club, I wouldn't be here talking in front of you guys right now. I'd probably be either locked up or probably not even here. So I want to thank you for listening to me and hope you take in consideration what these programs really do.
Thank you very much, Vanessa. And thank you for taking the time, for giving your time to come here and talk to us. Could you say something about the kind of work that you did for you know, on your T3 work experience and what you learned from that work?
At first, you know, they started making us do, like, money matter classes, which was a step to require to get the job. So that had to include with, learning how to manage your money and how to save money and how to do all that kind of stuff. And I learned how to, like, you know, when I get my money with, you know, every paycheck coming, I know what to do with it and how to save it. And also, you know, they taught me, like, leadership skills. You know, I worked with the kids there at the club and leadership skills and, you know, they helped me build a resume and for a job. You know, they just prepare you for the world out there, really, because, you know, it is true. You know, now we're struggling with youth employment. Nobody wants to hire youth because, you know, all of us, all the adults now are trying to apply for the same job, you know. So they really do prepare you for the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And the work that you did with the kids there at the Boys and Girls Club, so what sort of thing did you do with them?
I would interact with them. Sometimes we'd do, like, educational games and, you know, like, what school kind of thing. Kind of like just get them, you know, just to be kids and just have someone to they could relate to, you know, which, you know, I was there, and a lot of them could relate to me, and they really enjoyed that because it's not just an adult, you know, it's like kind of someone around the middle, teenager, working with them, and they could kind of understand them and act cool around them. So they really enjoyed that, and just having someone around them they could look up to or go talk to for advice.
Great, thanks, Vanessa. Senator Kelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to come today. Your story is really powerful, and I hope that you keep telling that story to a lot of people, including the last part. I think we really marginalize a lot of young women who become mothers when they're young, and suggest that that's somehow, you know, the end. Like you said, I became a mother when I was 20, and many people become mothers when they're young and go on to do great things, and I hope that you keep talking about that now and 20 years from now, and I can't wait to see where you go.
Okay. Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. Thank you, Vanessa, and you have overcome the odds, and you know, because as you know, it is, you know, the odds were stacked against you, and so you are overcoming that, and I'm really glad that you're here to tell us that story. And you talked about how you sort of transitioned from, you know, kind of changing your mind while you're in juvie, realizing you need to be an example. But then when you became a part of this program, you're like, yeah, I'm just doing this because I want to pay the fines, but I don't want to become a part of the program. When did you change your mind about the program?
I think it had to do more with like the volunteering, because they would call me and they'd be like, "Oh, you want to do this volunteer opportunity?" And I'd be like, "Okay," and they kind of started like to get me out there, because I was kind of like closed in, isolated. I didn't want to go anywhere because I was on probation, so I couldn't go anywhere. So I'm like, oh, "Okay, well, I might as well do something." And I noticed that the things I was doing, you know, when I was volunteering, like I was volunteering at Marion Polk Food Share. And there, I knew that by packaging all the food and doing all of that was going to help somebody else. And I liked feeling that way. I liked helping other people in need. And I know that that food was going to benefit homeless that were out there. So that kind of clicked. Yeah.
Thank you. Tim?
Chair Denbrough, Senator Thatcher, committee members, I just wanted to comment because she's so humble and modest. But part of this program is you have to volunteer 20 hours somewhere else in the community. They all want to do it at the club because they feel comfortable, but she chose Marion Polk Food Share. And as she was getting A's and B's going through her high school, where she was a straight F student, her mother, who worked very hard, 12 hours a day, said, "Let's celebrate." She wanted a pair of Nike shoes, so her mom was saving $25, and she was on her first paycheck saving $25. So they pulled their money, and mom said, "Well, tomorrow after T3, go by the store and buy it." She came home. She didn't have the shoes. So mom said, "Did you not have time?" She said, "No, I had time." She said, "Do you not have the money still?" And she says, "No, I don't have the money." And the mother says, "Well, where's the money?" And she says, "Well, you know, at T3, we have to serve 20 hours, and I do it at Marion Polk Food Share. And where I help, I bag rice and tie it up, and to the right are three shelves. And on the shelf, there's a middle can. It says, for $50, you can feed four families for a week." So I went to the front desk and gave them my $50, thinking it's more important they eat than have a pair of shoes. Don't get me wrong, we got her a pair of shoes.
Amazing.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you. Tim, you mentioned that the cost of this program, the investment required, is modest compared to all the benefits. So how is it being funded, and, you know, what are the partnerships that are required to make a program like this work?
Sure. Very simple. So I'll start from us and then scale it from there. So Chair Denbrough, committee members, we were first funded through the Workforce Investment Board. It's Insight here locally, is the name, was Job Growers. And then from there, the community started to get engaged, and we actually received quite a bit of money to fund it for the next 5 years, 50% of it to continue on. And then what had happened, the Youth Development Council, when they repositioned some of the funding and so on, started to scale this program across Corvallis, Grants Pass, and Lebanon. And so there's some different funds. Some of them might have a little bit from the Workforce Investment Board or the Youth Development Council. Either way, they complement each other to provide the seed money. So it gives time for these organizations like Boys and Girls Club and many different nonprofits who are doing this great work to show the community the worthwhile investment, and then to get the community to invest beyond it to create enduring impact beyond the initial investment.
Great, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, all three of you, for coming forth. All right, our next panel, we have Christopher Davis, we have Carmen Sindo Naranjo, and Katie Mena. So we have Marion County, we have Lane County, and we have Jackson County represented. So whoever wants to start, please go ahead.
Okay, I'll start.
Monroe, members of the committee. My name is Christopher Davis, and I live in Salem, Oregon. Okay. I belong to the Empowerment Leadership for Youth here in District 4. And we're the ELI program. I have worked at Charlie's Philly Steaks for 10 months. They helped me get a job. My boss has told me I have great ambition, and I am the best person he's hired by far since he's worked at Charlie's. My duties change at work. I do anything from opening the store by myself to running the store when my manager's not there to deal with customers if they have any complaints. We always make sure that you have a great customer experience every time you come and visit. When I was born into poverty, the odds were immediately against me. My mother worked, and my father, he was absent, as his choices in life led him to prison. I have witnessed much physical and emotional abuse because I have tarsal coalition in my feet. One in every 10,000 people have it. People always made fun of me for the way I walked. Therefore, I kept getting in trouble for sticking up for myself and my friends. At 17, I dropped out of school. I didn't feel like I could complete anything in life. People were always putting me down and telling me I was going to be worthless like my father. I always had a thought in the back of my head, how could I be like him if he was never around? For example, when I was 18, I was arrested. I made some bad decisions, and what people said about me was becoming truth, and I started believing what people had said about me, and they were right. I was nothing but a screw-up like my father, but I didn't want that in my life, and that's my ambition, not to be like him. When I was 19, I decided to turn to God, and I got baptized. I prayed for change in life, and I got it. I started going back to school to get my GED. There was some change, but not enough. And after that, I was introduced to the ELI program. I wasn't sure what to think when I was first introduced to the ELI program. The program seemed to be too good to be true with what they offered to help me with. Even with my history, they wanted to be my rock and my foundation to my future. I've never heard of programs like this growing up, just bouncing back and forth from city to city growing up. The ELI program, they had brought me in and showed me different organizations. They enrolled me in their financial literacy course and showed me how to deal with my payments, my bills and all that I have, do my banking account and all that. I would get paid from work. They showed me that I have the courage and I can do anything that I set my mind to. Nobody had ever shown me that but ELI until I found ELI. They helped me get a bus pass while I was in school so I can go around and look for work because I was trying to bounce from couch to couch, living away from my parents' house because I didn't want to really be there. They helped me get my permit, my driver's license, my forklift certificate, my food handler's card when I got my job. They got me some new clothes and a haircut, so I looked decent when I got my job. They got me my CPR first aid certificate, so I can help anybody if I wanted to, if I seen it. They gave me a job training course that helped me refresh my resume, and after that I got a job, and I appreciate that. I'm trying to get back into school because I don't want a job, I want a career. I don't want to be flipping Philly cheesesteaks every day for the rest of my life, you know? It's not what I plan on doing. And I think these programs help the troubled youth that are growing up in poverty with little to no support from their parents because they're living paycheck to paycheck trying to have a stable home for their kids. The program has given me opportunities to receive job training to help get jobs that require specific experience. They provided a great backbone for me when I needed someone to talk to. The ELI is there. The ELI has also taught me valuable information that my parents couldn't teach me growing up.
Thank you, Christopher. We'll hear from all three of you, and then I'm sure we'll have some questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Dimbrough and committee. I'm Carmen Sendo, and I come from Echo High School from Eugene. I went to two traditional high schools before I went to Echo, and they didn't work out for me. I was never a straight A student. Math was like a nightmare. I just know. Going to Echo changed me in so many ways. We had to take the NCRC Workus test in order to graduate, and I scored really high in math. So now I don't have to take math. Good. The NCRC has helped me a lot. I'm not 18 yet, so I can't really get a job right now. Everyone's looking for someone that's over 18. But since I have the NCRC in my resume, I keep getting callbacks saying, when you're 18, the day you turn 18, come back and we'll interview you and you'll probably get a job. I have an offer and a caregiver, as a caregiver. So that's what I'm gonna do and that's what I wanna do. I wanna study to be a hospice. I feel like Echo has opened my eyes in so many ways.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Senator, or Mr. Chair Dimbrough and members of the committee. My name is Katie Mena. I am a senior at Phoenix High School in Southern Oregon, and I'm a part of College Dreams. So I'm a bit different. I'm not like I've done pretty good in school, in middle school and in high school. However, when I was little, I had trouble in my classes. My mom switched us from Spanish to English, my brother and I. So it was a hard transition for me, and I grew up not really having people like believe in me, kind of just like I'm just a statistic. So in high school, I learned about College Dreams, and I was able to be a part of that, and just the help that they've given me is nothing like any other program that I've been a part of. I've had multiple mentors from them, and they've just, with anything, we were in transition in our school with the College Center advisors and with the TRIO advisors. So for a while, there was really nobody there for our students. And I've always been one to always be in the College Center. So to have them there just to ask them any questions about college and about how to financially be ready for it, it's been amazing. I'm a part of their IDA program, which is a program that helps students practice saving. For every dollar that you put in, they give you $3. So that's something that's kind of different for me because currently with my dad, he's not at home. He's never had a good, he's never been good at saving. So I never really had that example of having like a savings account and being steady with money. So it's something that I'm learning. And they actually did help me get my current job. I worked one-on-one with Jen Perry. She helped me set up my resume. I kind of just went up to her one day and I was like, you know, can you help me get a job? So she worked with me, and that was when they first started their program with the job council. So I was kind of like their guinea pig, and they're like, yeah, can you show up at this time at the job council for an interview? And I was kind of scared because I haven't really had interviews. So for them to do this for us and teach us how to interview correctly. So they interviewed us and then they gave us feedback on how it went. So that was a lot of help. And just everything that they've been there for me. So we had a careers day. I've always known what I wanted to do, but I've always kept my options open. So when they had careers and gears, they took a bunch of students from my school and I. So it was a great opportunity to be able to actually see all the areas and the places, the works, the careers that they have in my community. And I was able to ask a bunch of questions and to explore more careers. Let's see what else. They've also helped me to pay for most of my college credit classes that I've gotten. I'm going to graduate with about 30 college credits from Southern Oregon University. And without their help, that wouldn't have been possible. I actually took a class at Southern Oregon University fall term, Since I'm working now, but a lot of my money goes towards gas or just anything that I might need or my family might need. So it's kind of budgeting. And I don't think I would have been able to pay for those classes without College Streams. And they've also paid for my SAT and ACTs. I've taken each twice. The first time I didn't get the score that I wanted to get. Just to know that I had the option of retaking it to get more merit scholarships, it was great to know that they're there for me and just all the help that they're giving me. With the money that I'm putting in my IDEA account, it's a great weight off my back that I'm going to have because I know $8,000 is going to be what they're going to be able to pay for my tuition. So that's $8,000 that I don't have to worry about paying for college. So College Dreams is just, it's amazing. And I hope you guys continue to fund them. And thank you for all your support.
Thank you very much, Katie. And so are you going to continue at Southern? Have you decided what you're going to do?
I haven't decided. I've been looking at Southern Oregon University, Portland State University, and Western Oregon. I've also been looking at a university out of state. So just talking with them and just having one-on-one conversations whenever they're there, it's a great help.
Okay. Well, if you go out of state, we want you to come back into state.
Definitely. All right.
Okay, colleagues, questions for this panel? I do have one that would really apply to all of you. That is, how did you find out about the program in the first place, you know, that this was an option for you? Christopher, maybe you could start with...
I found out about the program because I was going out and looking for work when I was doing my GED, and I went down to the work source down in Cottage and Union downtown, and they had a flyer that was there, and I went down and tried it out.
Great. How about you, Carmen?
I found out about ECHO. Like I said, I went to other high schools before I went to ECHO. The first high school I went to, it was like really, had a really bad time there. And I was trying to switch schools, but they wouldn't let me. They were like, no, you belong here and you're going to stay here. And then I was like, well, this isn't even the school I'm supposed to go to. That was in my home school. So I ended up switching to the school I was supposed to go to, and it was better than the first one, but still not what I was looking for. And I had a friend that goes to ECHO because she has the baby. So I asked my counselor about it, and she's like, if you want to go to ECHO, then do it. We can't keep you here if you don't want to be here. And I ended up going to ECHO, and it's really changed my life in so many ways.
That's great. And Katie, how'd you hear about the college?
So I heard about it through my school. I had Brenda Aguilera. She actually called me down one day to the college center, and she told me about the program. And she helped me apply for it and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I assume you're all telling people you know about these programs as well, right? I mean, word of mouth is...
Cards around. You know, see, like, a bunch of kids that need help. I'll get you some help. I'll get you a resume made, I hope you get a job. I hope you get clothes, They do a lot of stuff for you that a lot of people don't do. Unless you ask for the help, and sometimes you can't ask for the help.
That's right.
Mr. Chair,
you're
bringing up a lot of things that just you don't think about. Getting the bus pass so you can get to where you're going, getting you some clothes, getting you the permit, getting you the, helping you, with all these little tiny steps that seem insignificant, but they really play an important role in
they're
the huge. Scheme of
things.
Well,
you have to think, if you live in North Salem and you got to go to South Salem to get to where you need to go, that's anywhere from 6 to 12 miles. How are you going to walk that? You need a bus pass. And my parents aren't going to shell out $40 a month for me to get a bus pass. So it's so I was out trying to look for work, making money, so I can at least try. Mm-hmm. And the ELI program showed me that I can. And I got a job. I've been there almost a year. I do anything but order the stuff to bring in to make the food. You know, I can run the store if I wanted it, but I don't want to. I'm trying to go to school so I can be somebody.
Sometimes that is the value of work, is it tells you what you don't want to do, not just what you want to do.
Right. Indeed.
Okay, thank you, all three of you. Thanks for coming forward. We don't usually allow applause, but today's a special day. So I'm going to call up, we do have a panel on OICC. We have a couple of OICC folks. I'm going to call them up right now. Aaron Phillips and Armand Chappé. Chappé. So, gentlemen, we're intrigued by what we've heard about OICC, and now you're going to tell us more, right?
Sure thing.
And let me say, you don't need to be right up against the mic. Actually, you can just sit back, and these are very, very sensitive.
I'll warn you, I was raised by gym parents, by two gym teachers, so I can be loud. Because that's how we talk in my house. Chairman Dembro, Vice Chair Thatcher Committee, my name's Armand Chappé. I've been a teacher crew leader with OICC for about 8 years now. As teacher crew leader, I've been a teacher crew leader for three different programs at OICC. I've had natural resource crews, I've had garden crews where we've done gardening and farming, things like that, and I've done construction crews with OICC. The neat thing about OICC is that crew members that are part of the OICC year-round, OICC has, like what was mentioned earlier, they have a school year grant, and then they have the summer grant. The summer grant, the youth are paid minimum wage. For a lot of them, it's their first real job, and their first real job experience that they can put down on a resume, which is really, really key. When I was younger, it was really easy to get a job. It's really, really tough for young people to get their first job these days. The school year programs, the youth are able to earn an education award up to $1,500, which is really key, which is what I've done a lot with OIC, which is really key in order for them to maybe start college or try out college or have the opportunity to go to college. You know, I hope you take a chance to look through your reports from OICC. There's some great pictures in here of the different crews, a couple different crews that I've worked on, and what it is that they're up to. Some of the crews are doing natural resource type like things, trail building, working with hatcheries, working at the coast, maybe doing invasive species removal, things along that line. There's other crews out there that are growing crops. They're basically called garden crews. One of the crews with Community Services Consortium, which I work with, we actually have 50 raised beds in downtown Corvallis. It's a great asset to the community. Plus, we have a half acre that we partnered with another agency that allows us to use a half acre of land. We grow a number of different crops, anywhere from greens to tomatoes. We sell them at the farmer's market. The youth are learning entrepreneurial skills. They're learning retail. They're learning cash handling. I mean, they're learning these real world skills that, you know, they're going to use to get their first job or get another job. Most youth that are coming out, you know, graduating high school, if they can get a job, it's usually in a fast food place, if they can. Cash handling, retail, front line. Really key stuff. One of the other programs I work with is a youth build program. We're building low-income housing. The youth there, Aaron is one. I'll let him talk to you a little bit, tell you a little about his story in a little bit. We're building low-income housing. They're learning a trade skill. We're lucky enough to get our youth certifications, whether it be OSHA 10 training or a duck sealing class. We've made it able to get these youth their trainings, their certifications, and then have been able to help them get placed in the workforce. We recently just had a young man because he had these certifications to actually get a job with an HVAC company. He's been there 3 months. They're going to send him to a training in Texas. This is, like, great stuff. So, you know, OICC, I mean, I don't know. I can't say enough about it. I love OICC. I've been doing it for, like I said, 8-9 years. I can't remember. It creates, a lot of opportunity. I mean, a program like this. Like you said earlier, I mean, sometimes it's really important to learn what it is that you don't want to do as well as it is that you do want to do. And some of these programs out there, you know, OICC being one of them, gives youth a chance to navigate that path. That being said, I just want to introduce Aaron Phillips and let him tell you a little bit about how these programs have helped him.
Thanks, Aaron. Yes, Aaron.
Hi there, Chair Dimbro and others. So I'm going to just kind of do a little quick rundown.
Yeah. Aaron, could you say your name for the record?
Aaron Phillips. Thanks. Sorry, a little nervous. I haven't talked in front of people for a while.
It's fine.
So I'm just going to do like a little rundown. So when I was 13, I started experimenting with drugs and the kind of whole criminal type field. And, you know, that didn't do me good. I dropped out when I was 16. I got my GED through Albany CSC. They paid for it. It was great. They gave me a job opportunity, which I blew off. I ended up doing an incarceration time. I'm a convicted felon. And so my release, I just released September 16th. And for about 3 weeks after I released, looking for employment was just so hard. I mean, I can't get a job at McDonald's or at a Taco Bell, where most people 20 years old can. And so I found out about the youth gardens which is the CSC Youth House Gardens. I found out about them on Craigslist, and I started working there about a month and a half, and I heard about the youth build, CSC youth build, and moved over to there. And since I've been there for about 2 months now, 2.5 months, I have gotten my BPI, which is Building Performance Institution Certificate. I've gotten my PTCS, duct sealing class. I got a certification coming up soon for like lead certification. They're really helping me to, you know, they're giving me the means that I need to actually find a job with what I can with, you know, my background and that kind of stuff. And I know that I couldn't have gotten this far without them. You know, they've gotten me, I just recently got my license, first time I've ever had my driver's license. They paid for that, my permit, you know, they paid for all that. And yeah, it's just been a really great program. I'm en route in May to go into construction, probably concrete. So it's really a great opportunity. And I just want to thank you guys for consideration, the funding. So,
thanks, Aaron. So what do you think you would have done if you hadn't hit Craigslist and opened your eyes?
You know, I don't know. I'm an active member in AA and NA right now. So, I mean, I've overcame the substance abuse problems. But without finding a job and employment, I can't say what I would have done. It was very discouraging just that 3 weeks that I was out and couldn't find a job. And so, yeah, this program has helped a lot. Yeah.
Colleagues, questions? I have to, you know, in all candor, I have to reveal that I'm a member of the OICC Advisory Committee. I've seen all the good work that this group has done, you know, both in terms of the service that they're providing the communities and, you know, the restoration and all these projects, but also the effect that they've had on youth. It's really something. I believe that the governors, the way that we're structured here, I think Karen, you got a sense of that from Karen, that OICC is actually part of the CCWD, the Community College and Workforce Development, and that's because a lot of the funding comes through those Federal Workforce Investment Act funds that run through the CCWD, but it's... you know, it really is, I think, a key part of the overall youth development initiative.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
One thing that was occurring to me while
This latest panel was testifying, and I didn't write your names down. I have one of those memories, so I apologize. That there needs to be a way, and maybe there is, and I'm just not aware of it, but there needs to be a way to connect employers a little more readily to people in the situation that just described here, where he says he can't get a job here or there, you know, all these other likely places because of his background, he says. But I know that there are employers out there who would give a chance. And it just needs to be, you need to figure out a way to, you know, get a database of these people and, you know, so we can get some people, you know, into jobs that they can do.
Yeah. And I think we'll be hearing the next panel. We have somebody from one of the local workforce investment boards and what they've been doing to reach out to local employers and to create some of these connections.
I said that just for a segue for you, yeah. Mr. Chair.
We just rehearsed it
about
an hour ago.
It worked well.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
Okay, so our next panel, we have Nadesha Gill and Tyra Tanaka and Andrew McGough. So how do we want to do this? Who wants to go first?
First and foremost, I'd like to thank the Chairman Brown and the committee for having me today. I'm Nadesha Gill. I'm supporting POIC, and I'm from the ERCO Summer Works program as well. I'd like to start off by saying working has never been, like, just in my vocabulary ever in the saddest way. My mother worked her entire life, it seems, graveyard shifts from 8 at night to 8 in the morning, just long, and I would never see her get paid out for it. So I always felt like, why would I waste my time for that? Like, she would work so hard for these people, and I would be like, they don't, like, even care. Like, they don't even notice her. So I never gave it my attention either. Fast forwarding until I was 13, I started getting into being a bad kid, like, just doing everything my mother told me not to, 13, 14 through 15. 15 was the year that I got charged, my first charges. In results of that, I had to do 30 days and then ankle monitor after that. And so I was placed in POIC school to give me a second chance, and even then I didn't really care. There's an advisor, Elmer Yarborough. One day I was in his office, and, like, he was helping out these kids, and he would always tell me, like, you have to get on your game. Like, this is your time is slipping by. And there was another student in there filling out paperwork, and I asked her, like, what are you guys doing? Because I seen that she had a gift card. And it turns out that they would give us gift cards to go to our training classes. So I'm like, free money, yeah, I'm showing up for a training process. Like, I don't care how long that is. So I go to the training class, and I sit through about two classes, and then I'm ready to drop out. And then they give me the first gift card, so I'm strung along for the next week. We go back again, and then, like, she's saying stuff that, like, it seems like pertains to me especially. Like, working, I know you don't want to do it, but you have to find time to do it, because regardless, it's always going to be there unless you don't want to be anything. So I start this program, and I'm in it for, like, I want to say 3 months before I actually get a job. And I start the job, and it's just too much. You know, like, it's life. That's what it was. It was just too much. I had to wake up at 7:30 in the morning and be downtown. Just normal grown-up decisions, like, you had to do it. And I start getting more and more into it, and, like, people are starting to notice, like, you know, like, people are actually starting to notice. So I start doing the more, like they actually care. Like, they actually say that, hey, you are 16 years old, and you're showing up to work on time, and you're doing everything you're supposed to do, like, pat on the back. And that felt great. Like, you know, like, for to be able to turn to something like working and then school, like, you have a job and you go to school, like, that is so cool. Like, and I'll be like, it's just a job, like, I'm just showing up, I'm just doing it. And I would start the program, the next program, because there's two of it, there's WEXI and there's Summer Works, and after Summer Works, you have to go to WEXI. Then I started at the Oyster Bar, the job I'm at now, and I've been there for a full year, and they give you so many new developments. You get your food handler's card, which is basic, and then you get your liquor license after you turn 18, which is something that I didn't even know you can get, and, like, I didn't even know you can get unless you own, like a liquor store or something. So that was super cool to me. Like, that was awesome to me. And then after that, I got my liquor license, and then they started moving me up more. And I would never, like, sit back and say, oh, like, I could have done this. Like, this is easy. I could have done this. Because even back when I first started POYC, like, I could say, like I said before, work was not for me. Like, work was not, it's not, yeah, it wasn't going to work in my schedule. So now I'm sitting here, and I've been with the same job for a year and a half, I want to say, and I'm happy that I made the decision. I'm happy that they gave us the option of training. There's several other students that was in that class with me, and they themselves have, I've known mothers, fathers in there that have done great in that program. Yeah, that's all. Thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you, Nikisha. I'm sure we'll come back with some questions. Tara, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thanks again for having us and coming to hear our experiences and our stories. I just wanted to start off saying that...
Can you just start off by saying your name?
Oh, sorry.
It's one of the things we have to do for the record.
Okay.
In your own voice.
Okay. So my name's Tara Tanaka, and I work with OHDC Youth Source. We mainly do farming, and different kinds of internships are available to us, and I just wanted to start off saying that I grew up having pretty much everything to, like, get by. I didn't have to worry about anything. I grew up with a disability, and it's been hard. It's been hard, and I've always had everything that I needed and didn't have to worry about anything. I had a hardworking mom and dad. I had four great older brothers. One's actually here. I think he actually left. But he's here, and I know he's here supporting me. So yeah, I had, like, everything, and my mom always told me that she'll take care of me and I don't need to worry about anything. Things started to get harder, and we came out here for a better future and better, like, better stuff. Like, my mom wanted, like, a better job. She wanted a better education for us, which was awesome and great. She got a job, and it's been okay. But I told myself that she's not going to always be here to take care of me. So I was like, I need to get a job. I need to get things done. I need to take care of her, because she won't always be there to take care of me. And OHDC has been so awesome for me. It has been, like, my life so far, because they taught me so many things. They taught me how to build up my resume, make it look great. Like, my resume was just, like, this blank piece of paper with my name, my address, my phone number. It's sort of like, you know, like, when you go online and you're, like, signing up for your email or whatever, and you go to the bottom and, like, do you agree to the terms and conditions? And, you know, you just, like, check and go on. You don't even read it, but you're supposed to. That's what my resume looked like. But by the time I finished my first summer working here, my resume was, like, 2 pages long, and it's the kind you want to look at. It's, like, even I'm, like, impressed. Longer than my mom's and my dad's combined. So they, like, taught us so many things. Like, they gave me so many opportunities. They pushed me to become better and stronger. Better and stronger, and to improve myself. And I feel like I got far. And it's been really awesome. It's like they taught me, it's like they kind of like they taught me how to walk on my own, you know, when you first start out being a baby. And, like, they teach me how to walk, and that's hard. And I did a lot of things for the first time. Like, I came to Portland, and I was so afraid. I took the bus for the first time, and I was freaking out. And it's just so awesome, and I'm glad that I found them. They taught me how to work hard. They teach me, like, teamwork, how to be a team player. You get to work with customers, learn customer service. You get to market, you do marketing and, like, learn how to, like, pitch stuff, like, you know, sales pitch. Time management, how to use your time wisely, because there's a lot of things that we did, like how to balance school and work and just other stuff, like learning how to pay bills and teach you just think wisely and think smartly. And they taught me how to, like, be confident with myself, because that was honestly one of the hardest things, and I feel really confident now, because here I am, because I never thought I'd be here. And yeah.
Thank you very much, Tyra. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story and speaking from the heart, and that makes such a huge difference. Could you just tell me, so OHDC, what does that stand for?
Oregon Human Development Corporation. And it's a youth source super fresh farm.
It's a youth source.
So I work for OHDC, youth source super fresh farm. Yes.
Great, thank you.
Yes. So.
Hey, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro. Andrew McGough. I'm the executive director of Work Systems. We're the Workforce Development Board for the City of Portland, Washington, and Multnomah Counties. Good afternoon to all of the other members of the committee here. And I think your last question was a good one. And I'm going to try and pull and tie together some of these acronyms in a way that hopefully you'll leave here understanding that, in fact, there is infrastructure out there and there is a system out there, and it's working very well. As a workforce board, I'm not sure how to get this thing to go on again. Just click on here. Here we go. So you heard Tyra mention OHDC and Youth Source and Super Fresh Farms. And Denisha talked about POIC. And all of those are organizations that are funded by our local workforce investment board. And I think even when you think about things like OYCC and some of those other acronyms that you've heard today, a lot of those are supported through either partnership or direct investments by local workforce investment boards. And there are 9 of them across the state of Oregon. So there's infrastructure that exists across the state that receives some federal dollars and then invest those locally to serve adults, dislocated workers, and disconnected kids. So lo and behold, there is a method to the many acronyms that are out there. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't say, as the current chair of OWP, the Oregon Workforce Partnership, which is the coalition of workforce boards, we are there to be a resource to you as you sort of think about some of these things. So hopefully you can connect with your local workforce board and figure out what the heck they're doing, because a lot of them are doing some really good things. So I'm going to...
Maybe, Andrew, you could put together, you could, the OWP or the OYDC or whatever can put together an acronym app for us.
That's something we have to leave up to the kids.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But I'm sure that there are some crafty enough to do that right off the bat. But I'm going to talk really quickly. I've been told so many times today, you're the closer. So I'm coming in here. I'm like the Mariano Rivera of this day, I guess. So hopefully I'll be as fast and as successful as him. So we run a program. It's called Summer Works. It serves kids in Washington and Multnomah counties over the summer months, and the idea is to put kids to work over the summer months. And this emerged out of the Recovery Act funds, which were allocated. It was the stimulus dollars that came down in 2009, the Obama administration, when they first came in. They recognized, frankly, the severe issue we were having with the lack of participation by kids in the labor force. And actually, at the time, you don't measure youth unemployment, by the way. It's a measurement of their participation in the labor market. And at the time, that measurement was at the lowest level it's been since they started taking that measurement, which was just after World War II. And I can tell you it has not improved markedly since then. And that's a major challenge because most of us of my generation and before had lots of opportunity to work. And that has, for a number of reasons, changed for the new generation that are moving up. And there's really no better way to learn how to work than to actually go to work. So the administration allocated some dollars. We created Summer Works, and we were able to put 1,300 kids to work that summer. I guess it's another click. And here we go. So since then, since 2009, we've put 3,100 kids to work. Unfortunately, the ARRA resources went away after 2009. And so since then, we've really been scrambling to figure out how to fund these activities for youth. Because at the same time, the formula resources from the federal government have declined about 30% over the last 10 years. So there's declining resources at the federal end, sort of a one-time stimulus dollars. But because of the success we had in our program locally, my board felt very strongly that we wanted to continue this work. And so since we did start that program, about 76% of the kids were kids of color because, again, if you look at that participation rate in the labor market, all-time low in the aggregate. But if you look at kids of color, it is for some populations in the single digits. So it is amazingly low. Statewide, it's about 28% of kids who want to work do work. But for some populations, it's down in the 9 to 10% range. So it's a travesty for some populations. So 93% of our participants were low income. On the positive side, 89% of the kids completed their work experience and received a positive evaluation from their supervisor. 92% of participating employers, this is the one measure that I think is really most telling, would recommend the program to their colleagues. And 93% of the kids returned to high school, post-secondary school, or became employed. These programs really do work, and they work very, very well on both ends, on the supply and the demand side. Your question, Vice Chair Thatcher, about engagement of private sector, we are able to fund about a third of the program with federal resources. Two-thirds of the remaining resources are generated through private sector partnerships and partnerships at the local government level. One thing I know that, Chair Dembro, you were very interested in having Multnomah County Chair Multnomah County Commissioner Smith come here today. She's an enormous advocate. She's on my board of directors. She's a huge advocate for this program and has really been a remarkable champion both on the public and the private sector side. And so, you know, we have large and small businesses actively engaging, actively partnering with us to provide these experiences. At the local government level, I mentioned Multnomah County, City of Portland is a big contributor. So Mayor Hales is greatly supportive of this effort. City of Gresham, Beaverton, Multnomah County, as I mentioned, TriMet, and the Port of Portland. So we have a lot of partners at the local level, and we would really enjoy some state partnership here. This is a number that I think is very telling. Last year, we were able to put 600 kids to work. However, there are 32,970 kids in our region who are low income and could benefit from this kind of activity. And to be honest with you, if it were up to me, I think every single high school in this state, every single high school student in this state could benefit from working during their high school years. So finally, I think, you know, this statement, someone prepared this, I think this is really important. But I don't think that the kids just need a chance, because when they get an opportunity, it's clear that they make a true difference for themselves and for the state. And one thing that I always think about is in a state like Oregon, now you can't definitively say longitudinally, a lot of the data is still out there. Do kids really return to school? Do they stay in school? Do they advance in school? You know, it's going to take time for us to figure that out. I think that the indicators are promising, but before I'm definitive on that, I need a little bit more time. But there is one statistic that we know is absolutely true, and that's that kids who work during the high school years, during the year 16 to 19, make more money over the course of their lives. And in a state like Oregon that is so dependent on income tax to generate public services, I can't think of a better, smarter investment. So that's our pitch, and thank you again, Chair Dembo, for the offer, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Good job of closing, but we won't let you close just yet. questions for Andrew about his program or comparable programs around the state? Vice Chair Thatcher.
Thank you for the information on the fact that you have some private partnerships involved in this. My question would be, how did these people, individuals, entities, find out about the programs, and is there a better way to maybe advertise to those that might actually be out there that you just don't know about yet?
How did the kids find out, or the
businesses?
Well,
I meant the businesses that are partnering with you.
Well, we have staff people who are tremendous, and they're absolutely 110% committed to this. I have a large board of directors. I have 37 board members, half of whom are private sector members, so we tap them first. Secondly, we had champions in a county commissioner who used the bully pulpit of her elected office to say this is really important. She was joined by the mayor of Portland. So it's a lot of sort of trickle out. We work a lot with industry associations. So, for example, we do a lot of industry sector work. So we have direct connections to industry-based associations, Manufacturing 21, Technology Association of Oregon, Oregon Health Sciences University and their association up there. So we use our connections that we use to engage industry sectors, and we – you know, frankly, when you talk to industry and you talk about what are your major workforce concerns, number one or two is going to be, I'm worried about the pipeline. I don't know where I'm going to get kids. And so this is a direct way that we can respond to that. And we can actually put up some dollars, and we can do a lot more if we do it in partnership. And that's the other thing that I think industry really appreciates, is when we've got skin in the game, but we need them to get some skin in the game as well. And that could be anything from, hey, we can pay for a work experience or two, but when we get to a place when they're creating real value for your company, we need you to step up and contribute as well. And that's been very positively received.
I just want to throw in there, Mr. Chair. You do work through WorkSource, right?
I take it.
Okay, so
yes.
I'm wondering if maybe some of the companies that utilize that program to be, you know, have an automatic outreach to them, just to kind of spread the word a little bit more. Maybe that would be something. Just throwing that out there.
I think that's a good point, and I'm sure we do that. We can always do more. Thank you.
Great. Colleagues, other questions? Nadesh, I have a question. So in your work experience, so what kind of work are you doing now? I mean, what?
I'm a server. Like, server, waitress, shucker as well, was like the oyster area.
And where is it you're working?
Dan and Louise downtown. It's like an oyster bar.
Great, yeah. And are you Are you the only young person who's working there that came through this program, or are there others?
There's actually that business. It's a family-owned business. It's been there for 107 years. It's the oldest family-owned business in downtown Portland. The whole staff is actually kind of created off of people that actually need a chance. Like, several of our chefs are from New Avenue for Youth, I want to say. And I want to say another one is from another program I can't put my finger on, but a lot of the staff are of kids that haven't got a chance at other jobs or just need new work experience.
Mm-hmm. And do you see that as a good thing?
Oh yeah, great.
Do you sort of support each other? Yeah.
And it helps us understand each other better. Like, we all are there for the same thing. We're all there starting from the same point. It's not we're racing to get to the top. We all need help. Like, with the whole OCC thing, none of us knew where to even start to look for that. And we put all into it, and we gathered together, and we ended up getting a teacher to come to the bar, like our restaurant himself, and teaching us personally through, I want to say, a six-hour class. And that was cool to me. Like, yeah, it shows what teamwork can do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tyra, do you have anything you want to add to us about, you know, the actual kind of work that you've been doing?
So Youth Source Super Fresh Farm is it's a farm, and we farm during the summer mainly, and we grow like tons of vegetables and.
Where's it located?
In Durham, right behind the elementary school. And we did a lot of things. Like, we did like farming on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and then on the rest of the week we'd work on different things such as our resumes, or we'd help around the office, like help filing away like documents or helping clean up around the place. Like, we didn't just focus on like the farming aspect of it, but also as well as our other skills like teamwork and leadership skills and other skills that are really good and essential.
Great. Okay, thank you, all three of you, for coming forward. And thank you, all of you who've been part of this. This has, you know, as I think I mentioned this morning when I met with you all, you know, what's really important to us as legislators is, I mean, obviously we need the quote facts, we need the statistics, we need all of those things. But what, you know, we need what's just as important is seeing people's stories, just understanding how programs can make a difference. And it's one thing to read about it. It's another to look a person in the face and hear it straight out of their lips. And I really appreciate that. I think we all do.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Vice Chair. I think it'd be great to acknowledge the people who didn't get necessarily the opportunity to come up and speak to us, but they are, I'm sure, talking to individual legislators and participating in that way, and we appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say, colleagues, before I close this information hearing, that we're going to sort of be continuing this conversation on Wednesday, because our focus on Wednesday is career technical education. And so that's sort of workforce development inside the schools. You know, I happen to believe, I think many of us do, that CTE and employment go hand in hand, and that they should go hand in hand. So, you know, the more that we can help create or promote programs that do that, I think the better we'll be. So with that, I'm going to close the information hearing on youth workforce development, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 586. Senate Bill 586 is the subject of it is related to this general topic of youth development. Matt, you want to tell us what it does?
Absolutely. Chair Dembro, members of the committee. Senate Bill 586 increases the age of youth for whom the Youth Development Council may oversee a unified system of services from age 20 to age 24.
Okay. And to help shed some light on the problem that this bill is designed to solve, I'm going to call up Brenda Brooks, please, from the Youth Development Council, the YDC. Brenda.
Good afternoon. So, good afternoon, Chair Dembrow, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. Thank you so much for having this day in particular. It's been an amazing day from 9 o'clock until up until now. These youth who have come from all these programs, many of whom, I think all but one of these that you've heard from today, we support at the Youth Development Council with our community investment strategy. So it's just been an incredibly heartwarming day for me. For the record, my name is Brenda Brooks. I'm Deputy Director of the Youth Development Division within the Oregon Department of Education. It is an honor to speak to you today about Senate Bill 586. Currently, a little bit of background, the Youth Development Council statutes state that the council oversees youth in a continuum beginning at school age, which we view as age 6, up to age 20, in a manner that supports educational success, focuses on crime prevention, reduces high-risk behaviors, and is integrated, measurable, and accountable. So the goals of the Youth Development Council are to reconnect opportunity youth, and those are youth ages 16 to 20 in our Youth Development Council world, with education and career, to establish a secure connection for those younger youth that we term priority youth, ages 6 to 15, with education and future career opportunities, and to address youth violence and crime. And as Karen Hummelbaugh mentioned earlier, 1 in 7 youth is an opportunity youth here in Oregon. So the goals of the Youth Development Council are accomplished by developing statewide policy and by funding community-based efforts that address barriers to education and career and workforce success. So, as I said, priority youth are those 6 to 15 who are at risk of disconnecting from the education system, those who are already disconnected from the education system or at risk of being unable to transition successfully to the labor force in the future. So the national conversation for opportunity youth or disconnected youth is described as youth ages 16 to 24 who are not in school nor are they connected to the labor market. Because the council's been restricted here in Oregon in its description of the population of older youth as those being 16 to 20, it's been viewed as an obvious disconnect from the federal description of opportunity youth, which goes up to age 24. And as Senator Dembrow is well aware, the Youth Development Council's Youth Workforce Committee, which is now chaired by Tim Sinatra, who you heard from earlier, we've been coordinating that work and aligning components of the work of the Youth Development Council with the Youth Committee of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. And it was noted very early in our discussion that the age range was a hindrance in that funding alignment with programs and communities here in Oregon. So Senate Bill 586 proposes to broaden that age range of youth overseen by programs and services of the Youth Development Council from age 20 to 24, and it would allow the work of the council to align also with that national conversation of opportunity youth. It would allow for stronger alignment with programs administered by state and local agencies that support this population of youth through age 24. And although there is no direct fiscal impact on the Youth Development Division, the higher age range would potentially attract more community-based and school-based programs to apply for funds in our request for applications process, and currently the division is not identified to receive additional funding over its current service level, so that could be an issue, but otherwise the council likes the alignment very much and the direction of the proposed legislation. So I thank you very much for allowing me to speak on the bill. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very, very much, Brenda. Mm-hmm. Any questions, colleagues? Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Sorry. The one thought that occurred to me is that it could potentially dilute what's out there currently for the opportunity to use 16 to 20. Do you see that being a case where it could maybe divert funds that would be focused on the 16 to 20 year olds to the older ones instead, I guess is what I'm saying. Would it displace some of those programs?
I don't know that there, it is a fairly competitive process. There's just a certain amount of funding in the Youth Development Council purview. And in our last request for applications process that we're currently funding now in a 10-month window, we were not able to fund all that we would have liked to. But the thing that would help tremendously is to be able to fund the youth that we are mandated to serve. And it's really hard when a lot of the programs, to cut them off at age 20 is a bit of a disconnect for the workforce portion of what it is that we're mandated to do. So that's really been a difficult disconnect. But to say dilute, I don't like that word, but more funding would always be great.
Maybe displaced. That, I was just more concerned about maybe a displacement or, I guess.
A lot of the Senator Dembrough and Vice Chair Thatcher, a lot of the programs that we serve are before and after school programs, mentoring programs, the Black Parent Initiative, so a lot of parenting education programs. But we also do work a lot with training and soft skills development, workforce training, and it's just been a bit of a disconnect in the funding. Some of the programs that do come to us now needing funding, we're not able to fund them, those youth, and it's just been a hindrance.
I get it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
And the other element, as you said when you started, is that this could attract federal funding that currently you don't have access to, even though you have a program that, out in the field, maybe serving kids from, ages 18, 19, 20, 21, et cetera.
Absolutely. Chair Dembrough, we do view it as, I do think it would be a positive. We would be able to apply for more federal program dollars.
Great. Thank you, Brenda. Yes, Senator Knope.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough. Brenda, do you know why they only went up to age 20? And the council instituted the program in the first place?
There's been a lot of discussion as to why that was. There was some thought early on that it meant the 20th year, that it should have been written as the 20th year of school, which would be to age 24. Programs currently overseen by the State Commission on Children and Families went I think up to age 20, so I think that's why.
Okay, thank you very much, Brenda.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, let me know your thoughts about this bill. I'm inclined to schedule a work session on it next week or perhaps the week after, and we'll see what the fiscal looks like when we do that. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 586, and I'm going to open a work session. We have a few committee bills to introduce. So opening this work session for the purpose of introduction of committee measures.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that LC, or do you want me to go?
Wait, yeah, why don't you tell us what they are first, and then we'll go ahead and do it.
Thank you, Mr.
We
Chair.
We change the script every time.
Members of the committee, LC 2479 defines wages for certain wage claims, requires the employer to maintain time and pay records of terminated employees for 3 years from the date of termination to provide records to employees if requested, and to provide employees with written statements of reasons for termination. The LC modifies information that must be included in itemized statement provided to employee each pay period, establishes civil right of action for certain claims for unpaid wages and for violation of certain wage statutes. It specifies procedures for establishing lien for amount of unpaid wages and authorizes the Commissioner of Bureau and Labor and Industries to void notice of lien if Commissioner determines that the employee has failed to establish the prima facie case for wage claim. The LC finally prohibits the waiver of rights established under a certain act and prohibits discrimination by employer against employee for certain actions taken by the employee related to wage claims. LC 3833 authorizes county governing bodies and small business employers to enter new agreements for reimbursement of portion of wages paid to youth employees and specifies minimum requirements for terms of agreement. The LC establishes the first-time employment youth wage reimbursement project in Oregon Business and Development Department, authorizes the department to award grants to reimburse county governing bodies for reimbursements made under agreements with small business employers for wages paid to youth employees, and directs the department to adopt rules to implement the project. It establishes first-time employment youth wage reimbursement project fund and appropriates monies to the department for the purpose of the act, declaring an emergency and effective on passage. And finally, LC 3119 includes payments due for accrued vacation time and personal time off in the meaning of wages for the purpose of wage claims. It prohibits certain employers from adopting policy for a forfeiture of accrued vacation and personal time off wages upon termination of employment, and subjects employers that fail to pay accrued vacation and personal time off wages upon termination of employment to statutory requirements for payment of other types of wages upon termination of employment.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Well, a real range of issues there. Okay, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 2479, dated February 16th, 2015, and LC 3833, dated January 26th, 2015, and LC 3119, dated January 30th, 2015, be introduced as committee bills.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved that LC 2479, dated February 16th, 2015, LC 3833, dated January 26th, 2015, and LC 3119, dated January 30th, 2015, be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Senator Knope?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, LC 2479 and 3119. I have some objections to some of the content which is included in those bills. Just want to put that on the record.
Okay. So noted, Senator, and you will likely have more opportunity to discuss those. And for those of you in the audience, the introduction of committee bills is not a statement about how any of us feel about the content of those bills. It just allows them to enter into our legislative process. They'll be filed and heard and perhaps voted on, and who knows what will happen with them. But for today, we are introducing them as committee bills. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, any objection to these being introduced? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, I'm gonna close this work session. And colleagues, anything else for the good of the order? All right, then see you on CTE Day on Wednesday. We're adjourned.